This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, the U.S. State Department gravely disappointed today that opposing sides in South Sudan have not yet agreed on forming a revitalized transitional government, and 2 million people are facing severe food insecurity in Mozambique. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The World Health Organization says that dangers posed by armed groups in two Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo provinces are impeding progress in the battle to stop the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. Latest reports put the number of confirmed Ebola cases at 3,287, including 2,193 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
International health workers have achieved a lot since the Ebola epidemic in eastern Congo was declared in August 2018. The World Health Organization says the number of Ebola cases has decreased and stabilized over the past few weeks. While that is encouraging, WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says we are not out of the woods yet.
The risk of reintroduction of Ebola into former hotspots remains high and is contingent on the level of access and security in these communities. So the outbreak has been and is occurring in an extremely complex environment marked by poor infrastructure, political instability, as you heard, community mistrust of national authorities and outsiders, and ongoing conflict involving scores of armed militia groups.
Despite a recent decrease in the number of security incidents, attacks on healthcare workers and facilities remain unacceptably high. From January to October, the WHO has documented more than 300 attacks, causing 5 deaths and 70 injuries of healthcare workers and patients. And last week, a healthcare worker was killed in his home and his wife critically injured. The DRC has always been an area of high mobility. The armed conflict in the region has caused hundreds of thousands of people to flee their homes. But people move around for other reasons as well. Lindemeyer tells VOA among those on the move are infected people who could spread the virus.
Because they were moving, we cannot be too optimistic about ending this soon. So again, as I stated in the beginning, the weekly numbers of cases have stabilized over the past few weeks, but we're not, definitely not out of the woods yet, and we should not cry victory before we're at the end of this.
The WHO notes Ebola hotspots have shifted from urban areas to more rural, hard-to-reach communities. It says that, plus the extremely volatile security situation, creates additional challenges in hunting down the virus. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Citizens Manifesto, a social movement made up of various civic organizations, has been making consultations across the country in a bid to capture the true dream that all Zimbabweans share despite their walks of life. A recent national consultative meeting held by the group reveals that people want more power to hold their leaders accountable. That doesn't come as a shock for a country that was headed by Robert Mugabe, who became increasingly dictatorial and now feels powerless as the economy plunges, drought is hitting hard, and clean water and power become scarcer. Reporter Kuzaza Nawash has the details.
Briggs Bomba is the Citizen Manifesto's convener. He calls the group a citizens' movement that acts as a convergence platform meant to capture ideas from a variety of citizens. He explains how inclusive the National Citizens' Convention was.
People were hugging, people were in tears, people did not want to let go, people were confessing that this is the most moving and meaningful conversation that they've engaged in for years. And it's also because we had people who helped facilitate conversations to be meaningful, to be generative. It wasn't about a few experts lecturing listeners. It was really a small group conversation.
Bomba says the representative democracy, where a few elected leaders represent the masses, has failed in Zimbabwe.
As a country, we need to pursue a new vision of participatory democracy that is anchored on participation. Right now, there's a selection process that happens before the election that completely distorts the outcomes. And whether you're talking about rural areas, about urban areas, the outcomes of representative democracy have not served people well. Because in the selection process, it's about who has the money. You know, there's so many things that eliminates people who could be deserving representatives.
Because of this, Bomba says many women found themselves as independent candidates because the selection process wasn't favoring them. Pondering on solutions, he says the general feeling is that citizens should have more power to recall elected leaders who fail the masses.
We are championing now a whole new vision that is saying, let democracy be about participation in your local community. Let the communities be involved. And we are insisting that communities must be involved in every major decision at a local level. We want citizens to have the right to recall representatives who are no longer living up to the mandate or the trust that was invested in them. Anytime.
Bomba says having elected leaders be accountable to the people who voted for them will ensure that representatives deliver on their mandates or face being recalled. He adds that citizens feel past elections have always been about promises that go unfulfilled. Making elected leaders more accountable would ensure that voting is no longer just about promises, but about delivery too. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Zimbabwe's severe drought is worsening conflict between humans and wildlife with fatalities on both sides. Eddie Gondo gives us more on the story.
Villagers in Bulilima Ward 8 of the Wana area were stunned when they found the remains of a neighbor who was trampled by a marauding herd of elephants. It's just one example of a growing trend of human-wildlife conflict in Matabeleland South and other places, with 33 people killed this year. The National Parks and Wildlife Management Authority says at least 200 elephants have starved to death in recent months in two parks. Experts say the situation is dire as thirst-maddened animals have been invading nearby villages in search of water, leaving a trail of destruction. There are plans for an ambitious project to shift thousands of elephants, giraffes, lions and other animals to parks that haven't been hit as hard. Tinashe Farao, Zimbabwe National Wildlife and Park spokesperson, says aside from the drought, animal populations have reached unmanageable proportions, with elephant numbers more than double the capacity. According to Farao, the human-wildlife conflict is exacerbated by loss of habitat as the animal population has grown.
These elephants, they add up to at least 85,000 animals, against an ecological carrying capacity around 40,000. So we have doubled the number of ecological carrying capacity. And what is the impact now? There are three main things which elephants need. They need water, they need security, and they need habitat. That's why they are now moving into communities, in search of water and in search of food.
Farao says loss of habitat forces the animals to prowl villages if they catch even a scent of food and water. Degradation of infrastructure such as dams, which used to supply water to wildlife, has added to the problem. The Member of Parliament for Bulilima, Dingumuzi Puti, speaks on the matter.
The situation is dire, critical to say the least. In 1960, there is a dam that was constructed at Maitengo Conservancy, where there was no human and wildlife interface. Ostensibly, it was meant to serve purposes of supplying wildlife with water, adequate water. As you may know, that Zimbabwe and Botswana, we have more than 87% of the world's total number of elephants. But in their growth, they come to that traditional place in their memory. Now, these animals trek water towards human settlements. Situation results in elephants thinking that there is war between them and humans, and we have lost lives as a result.
In Puti's area, 4 people have been killed by elephants, and buffaloes and lions have been wreaking havoc on livestock. Puti believes the only way to solve the crisis is to rebuild the dam, a major challenge given the country's economic crisis.
So what's supposed to be done is reconstruction or repairing that dam called Maitengwe. That is the first and the only lasting solution. I think the issue is with funding. But it's our appeal that government should prioritize that project because it is a cause for concern when animals become this violent against humans. By shooting these animals or trying to drive them away. But driving them away and shooting them alone are not the solution because they are now used to that kind of violence, driven away, and they come back.
Meanwhile, terror is gripping the rural dwellers in Bulilima Rural District. The council is trying to educate communities on precautions in the event of an elephant or animal invasion. Villagers are advised to avoid traveling at night. Parks officials maintain that the villagers have to avoid taking matters into their own hands as per the law when it comes to fending off wild animals. But rangers are spread thin in the area. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
The U.S. State Department today said the United States is gravely disappointed that opposing sides in South Sudan have not yet agreed on forming a revitalized transitional government. President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar were to have agreed on a government of national unity by yesterday, November 12th. The U.S. State Department said the inability to demonstrate the political will to help the people of South Sudan calls into question their suitability to continue to lead the nation's peace process. The State Department says the U.S. will reevaluate its relationship with South Sudan's government and will work bilaterally and with the international community to act against those impeding the peace process. Combatant groups in South Sudan's civil war signed the revitalized peace agreement 14 months ago, but have missed several deadlines for organizing a transitional government and disarming factions. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz, on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Armed groups in 2 Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo provinces are impeding progress in the battle to stop the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. And the U.S. State Department today said the United States is gravely disappointed that opposing sides in South Sudan have not yet agreed on forming a revitalized transitional government. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society say about 2 million people are facing severe food insecurity in Mozambique. It says $7 million are needed to help them. More than half a year since cyclones Idai and Kenneth hit the country, thousands of people are at risk of disease outbreaks and worsening food availability in the upcoming rainy season, and nearly 38,000 children are at risk of malnutrition. For VOA, Mavis Ochera spoke with Rui Oliveira, the IFRC operations manager in the Mozambican capital, Maputo.
The situation is dire at the moment. As you know, the impact of the cyclone was not just on infrastructure and shelters, but it actually destroyed most of the crops. So people couldn't harvest this year and have been without any substantial agriculture for the past month. This is particularly critical because 80% of the people in Mozambique depend directly from agriculture to get the food on the table. So the situation is deteriorating in terms of food insecurity, and we are very concerned that particularly children may be starting to be affected with malnutrition. So this is something that we need to act on the immediate term by having food distributions in the most affected areas, as well as recovering the agriculture inputs for the planting season until the rainy season starts. On the other hand, we also have concerns around the health situation. Back in March, we had a cholera outbreak that was somehow quickly contained, but the sanitation and the hygiene situation for most of the displaced populations is not a good one at this moment. So this population is still living in improper and inadequate shelters with lack of sanitation, which may be prone as well to new outbreak situations. So something that we've been looking at, monitoring, ready to act, but it needs to be scaled up as the rainy season starts.
So currently, how many people are affected or risks being food insecure in Mozambique?
So in the central region only, where the cyclones hit, we have now 2 million people that are affected by food insecurity. And food insecurity has several levels. So they are getting into the moderate to high food insecurity now, and the situation may deteriorate in the coming months. Again, these are only the numbers for the cyclone affected areas in central Mozambique. But the information that we've gathered is that about 38,000 children are at risk of malnutrition.
But the International Federation of Red Cross, led by Dr. Jamila Mahmoud, was in Mozambique to kind of assess the situation. What are some of the interventions so far?
So we are doing water and sanitation interventions in areas that are most exposed to this risk of the health outbreaks. We've been doing this continuously since March, and we are scaling up this operation as the rainy season starts. We are also doing food distributions now during the lean season. At the same time, we distribute agricultural seeds and tools so people can start their self-recovery and rebuild the agriculture. The amount that is needed for the Federation appeal and in support to the Mozambique Red Cross particularly, it's now 7 million in the next immediate month, so in the next 3 months for this response. Overall, there is a humanitarian community appeal. The movement has put in substantial resources already, but the needs are so big that the amounts that we currently have are not enough to attend all these population that are in need.
That was Rui Oliveira, the Red Cross Operations Manager in Maputo, speaking with VOA's Mavis Ochera. The Rwandan government says it has reached its goal of 30% forest cover for the country. It says it achieved the goal before the targeted year 2020 through several tree planting campaigns. But environmental experts warn that if not properly managed, this pace can shrink as big commercial buildings rise in forested areas. Eugene Wimana has details from Kigali.
The 30% forest cover goal is perceived as another milestone in Ghana's efforts to protect the environment, along with a ban on single-use plastic bags and pilot projects in the use of electric cars and motorbikes for public transportation. Jean-Pierre Mugabo is the head of the forestry department in the Ministry of Environment.
We congratulate the efforts made from different partners, because we had development partners, you have government institutions who use it to plant trees and forests on hillsides, around the degraded areas, along roadsides. Although the efforts have contributed to this 30%, and we are very happy to be achieving the target we have set many years ago.
Mugabo credits numerous efforts and programs.
And every year we have the forest planting campaign. It means we mobilize all different institutions, either government, NGOs, and other government institutions to plant trees and forests. People should know that if you don't plant a tree, you don't have rights to cut even one. And then we have even shifted from cutting one and plant two, but cutting one and plant more.
However, environmental experts warn that given the growth of industrial buildings, construction projects need to be clearly examined to ensure they are environment friendly if the government wants to keep this source of oxygen. Abiasman Lagawa is the Dean of Faculty of Environment Studies at the Lay Adventist University of Kigali.
Environmental impact assessment is an exercise that is required before you start any development project. Then you have to assess and project in the future what will be the impact of a project on the environment, which means we are protecting our environment, because before any development project we have to include the environmental concern.
If this is respected, Abia says, then the climate change is mitigated.
Forest cover helped reduce the climate change in the sense that it can reduce these greenhouse gases through the phenomena we call it photosynthesis. This photosynthesis, the basic component of photosynthesis is carbon dioxide, which is the major greenhouse gas which is emitted from our activities, from industries, from their household.
Rwanda's achievement of 30% of forest cover is under the Bonn Challenge, in which the government has pledged to restore 2 million hectares of land by 2020. The challenge is a global effort to restore 150 million hectares of the world's deforested and degraded land into restoration by 2020. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Tomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.